Vanetics with Gabriel of Urantia and Neon Emerson Chase, an ongoing series of lectures and teachings on spiritual leadership, personal change, and the principles of divine administration. Part of the curriculum of the University of Ascension Science and the Physics of Rebellion. More information can be found at uaspr.org. This episode is titled Expanded Spiritual Cosmic Foundations versus Conventional Cement and Bricks Theology. Here is Neon Emerson Chase.
My talk today is based on two of Jesus' discourses on religion in the Urantia book that start on page 1728 and continue through 1733. And on page 1727 in the Urantia book, Jesus taught his apostles and disciples that when religion is wholly spiritual in motive, it makes all life more worthwhile, filling it with high purposes, dignifying it with transcendent values, inspiring it with superb motives, all the while comforting the human soul with a sublime and sustaining hope. True religion is designed to lessen the strain of existence. It releases faith and courage for daily living and unselfish serving. Faith promotes spiritual vitality and righteous fruitfulness. So many, many people, thousands and thousands of people in this country attend church in the Christian tradition, and yet they are as empty vessels and empty churches themselves. There's many reasons why people continue going to church. Maybe it's expected of them. Maybe there's nothing better to do. For many, it's politically and socially wise to do that, for people to keep their standing and their status, their political and social status within a community. For many people, it is some form of comfort. They have nothing to replace it with, nothing better. Those types of things. It was the same 2,000 years ago when Jesus walked the planet. And in his ministry, especially to his Jewish brothers and sisters, they relied on an empty religion, a religion of authority that lacked life. Jesus told, again, in these discourses, his apostles, and he is telling us today the same thing, that if we fully continue to grasp true religion, we will be like the truly full church, experiencing daily the greatest discovery possible for the human soul to make, the supernal experience of finding God for yourself, in yourself, and of yourself, and of doing all this as a fact in your own personal experience. It's the whole idea of it has to happen to each person individually as a personal experience. Again, Jesus told his apostles, as Christ Michael continues to tell us apostles of the divine new order, us change agents today, he says, "You are my apostles, and to you religion shall not become a theologic shelter to which you may flee in fear of facing the rugged realities of spiritual progress and idealistic adventure, but rather shall your religion become the fact of real experience which testifies that God has found you idealized, ennobled, and spiritualized you." I want you to think about that just for a minute. I think every single one of you can relate to this, that you've experienced the fact that God first found you before you found him. God is constantly reaching out, finding his children. In that, you've been idealized, and you still are being idealized. You're being ennobled, and you're being spiritualized. And that's why in this sickness, though you may temporarily have lost yourself in what we would call that temporary insanity of the emotions of the body and mind, an automatic human response on Urantia, because you've been idealized, ennobled, and spiritualized by true religion, the true religion of the revelation, you were able to lift yourselves up into those higher emotions. And so it was much more temporary, that feeling, that temporary sense of being isolated from God, lost, separated. We also know that innate in all people is a religious urge. What do people do with it? That's the thing. The religions of the world have a double origin. All the main religions of the world, natural and revelatory. And that natural origin is what we call the evolutionary process, the evolutionary religions. And part of that process of evolutionary religions is that revelation does creep in. We're taught by Jesus in these discourses that there are three distinct forms of religious devotion. The first one is, and these are found on page 1728, primitive religion, which is the semi-natural and instinctive urge to fear mysterious energies and worship superior forces. It's chiefly a religion of the physical nature. It's the religion of fear. And when you read about the history of the people, the evolution of humans on Urantia, there's those wonderful teachings in the book about the evolution of religion. And that's what starts out, is you don't understand lightning. And so there's an explanation that comes for lightning. It's fearful, because if a person doesn't have the scientific facts of lightning and they see lightning come down and strike a tree or strike a person and kill them, it's a very powerful force there. It's fearful. Where did that come from? Because there is that natural, innate knowing that there's supernatural forces, that there's super material forces, people will then, out of their fear, develop a theory. As we know, a large part of science is based on theory, and often scientists have to relinquish theories that they've built their foundations and their belief systems on because they find out those theories are false. Well, a lot of your primitive religion has been based on theories of why things happen. There's some god of the thunder or lightning was angry, and so he did this, and therefore we need to do something to appease, because people humanized God. That's how they understood him. So if people are jealous, if people are wrathful, if people are petty, then God must be too. That's what they understood. That comes from primitive religion. And then there's what Jesus called the religion of civilization, which is the advancing religious concepts and practices of the civilizing races, the religion of the mind. It's the intellectual theology of the authority of established religion tradition. All of the mainstream accepted Christian denominations in Western civilization are the religion of civilization, religion of the mind. All of your major established world religions, Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, to give you some examples, Taoism, they are religions of civilization, religions of the mind. And then there's a third expression of religion that Jesus calls the true religion, which is the religion of revelation, of supernatural values. It's the religion of the spirit as demonstrated in human experience. There are many, many people who have had a truly religious experience within their expression in primitive religion as well as religion of the mind. But if they get lost in that primitive religion or that religion of the mind or religion of civilization, then they begin to no longer be progressive. And that's the secret of true religion, It is constantly ongoing, constantly evolving. The empty church, whether it's a physical building, an organization, or an individual, manifests the primitive religions and the religions of the mind. And we know that primitive religions are involved with a lot of childish, superstitious ceremonies, rituals, and beliefs. Unfortunately, there's a lot of educated people, literate people, who in their search for true religion and valid personal religious experience are going back. And in the New Age movement, many of them are reverting back to primitive religions. You have the various religions of the indigenous peoples, and they are primitive religions. Like, for example, the Native American, the various ways of worshiping in the Native American spirituality, the Wiccan movement, which involves old Celtic ways. These are just some examples. The Australian Aboriginal beliefs that all of a sudden people are getting excited about, and the people are reverting to primitive religions. That's not the way to go. Even 2,000 years ago, Jesus deplored the fact that so much of this primitive form of worship should persist in the religious forms of the more intelligent races of mankind. And it's still happening today. We can understand why, because people are fleeing the mechanistic industrialized society. They're looking for a valid spiritual experience. Many of these people that are reverting to primitive religions were brought up in the religion of the mind, the religion of the civilization that's upheld by authority, mainstream Christianity, or whatever. Even the Urantia movement now basically has gone in and developed a religion of the mind, religion of authority. And Jesus said that these religions, the settled, crystallized, and established religions of authority, do afford a ready refuge to which the distracted and the distraught soul of man may flee when harassed by fear and tormented by uncertainty. There's a type of security in that. And he told his apostles that for a long time there were live on earth those timid, fearful, and hesitant individuals who will prefer thus to secure their religious consolations, even though in so casting their lot with the religions of authority, they compromise the sovereignty of personality, debase the dignity of self-respect, and utterly surrender the right to participate in that most thrilling and inspiring of all possible human experiences. You have a lot of priests right now within the Catholic Church that are in a lot of trouble because they're trying to break out of the traditions of Catholicism, the empty rituals that mean nothing to them and mean nothing to the people that they're serving. And so they are looking for higher ways of religious experience, and they're in trouble with the authority from Rome. And some of them have been asked to leave the church because of this. So there is a movement within the churches, especially the Catholic Church, where people are trying to break out of those crystallized forms and find a higher way of relating to God. What they're looking for is they're trying to leave the empty church, and they're trying to move into that full church, and it's the religion of revelation. The religion of revelation makes us as individuals in a full temple. And according to Jesus, this true religion of revelation provides the personal quest for truth, the exhilaration of facing the perils of intellectual discovery, the determination to explore the realities of personal religious experience, the supreme satisfaction of experiencing the personal triumph of the actual realization of the victory of spiritual faith over intellectual doubt, as it is honestly won in the supreme adventure of all human existence, man seeking God for himself and as himself and finding him. There's some words here that I think I need to repeat. If you embrace this religion of revelation, which today is gifted to us through the Urantia book and the Cosmic Family volumes, if you really embrace it, have the courage, does take courage, and to continue in that progressive movement. When you look at perils of intellectual discovery, why would it be facing the perils of intellectual discovery? Because most of us have established belief systems that we're very comfortable with. Revelation's going to shake that foundation, is going to stretch our minds, is going to make us think more. We're going to get shaky at first. But instead of turning and running, if you tap into that sense of adventure that is a part of all of us, we will feel an exhilaration in that intellectual discovery. We will have a new determination to continue. We will experience a supreme satisfaction. We will actually experience personal triumph, maybe for the first time in our lives, in this experience. Jesus also told his apostles that acceptance of this revelation must not be based on sentimental emotions, but on an attitude of the soul. He told them to pray the Father to transform your emotions of mind and body into the higher loyalties of mind and the more satisfying experiences of the Spirit. There are certain religions, primitive religions especially, but also even found in the religion of the mind, there's certain groups that base everything on emotions, lower emotions. And so they have rituals and they have ceremonies and they set up environments so that people can work up into this emotional frenzy. And it's almost tapping into not a union of souls and outer energy, not that, but more like a mob mentality. And so it's almost that people at least once a week have to have their fix of getting caught up in this emotional frenzy. And that is not true religion at all. When he was giving this talk about true religion, he saw that his apostles were getting really excited. They were emotionally excited. And boy, I'm telling you, they were, let's go, man. Let's go out there and let's conquer the world. And he said, just a minute. Each one of you go off by yourself. You spend some time by yourself before God. Calm down. Don't get caught up in your emotions. And that's when he said, pray to God that you'll tap into those higher emotions. After you've calmed down, after you've just rested a little bit, then come back and tell me that. Will you still have that conviction that you do now? He told him that there are two positive and powerful demonstrations of embracing this true religion of the Spirit. He said, don't try to prove to anyone that you found God, because it's not going to work, because they have to experience it themselves. So don't get into these intellectual discussions with him, these debates, to prove to them how intelligent you are, how much you know about the nature of God, and on and on and on. Don't do that. It doesn't work. You're wasting your time. But there are two ways that you can show people that you found God. It has nothing to do with cheap talk, by the way. Number one, by the fruits of the Spirit showing forth in your daily routine. How do you walk your talk, not how you talk your talk? And number two, by the fact that your entire life plan, your entire life plan furnishes positive proof that you have unreservedly risked everything you are and have on the adventure of survival after death in the pursuit of the hope of finding the God of eternity whose presence you have foretasted in time. If a person is not willing to give up everything every possession they have, their status, their identity for this true religion, then you're not going to impress people. The religion, the established religions of authority that are accepted, they don't ask a person to give up any of that. In fact, the religions of today in this country are so secularized that in order to be politically valid, you should be going to church. Jesus said that true religion should really have nothing to do with the established world, that there should be a definite separation. Now, for people to blend in with society, to accomplish, to become a successful businessman or politician, it is very wise to be in one of these churches of authority. That's not true religion. It has nothing to do with what you say in witnessing to your family, to your friends. And that doesn't mean that they're going to take the steps you do. But if they begin to see you change and transform from that old identity you were with them, they begin to see you turn into a much nicer person. And you prove to them and you relate to them in a higher way. Those are the fruits of the Spirit. And if you are willing to give up everything, and some of you have experienced your parents even offering a little bribe to you, haven't you? Little financial bribe. I'll give you so much if you come home and become sane again and come back into our little world. And then they really think you're beside yourself because you're going, no, thank you. And you're living in a tent or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that you're doing. And they're going, they don't want that car I'm offering them or all this money. Right there, you don't have to say anything. Let them think and chew and cogitate on that for a while. That there will impress them because that's a powerful demonstration to them. Being a nicer person than you were before, a much nicer person. As he said to his apostles 2,000 years ago, Christ Michael said to his reservists in every spiritual reformation and renaissance that some of us have been involved in, and he's saying it to us change agents today, you who have been called out of darkness into the light are expected to believe with a whole heart. Your faith shall dominate the combined attitudes of body, mind, and spirit. Jesus, often he did this in his teachings. He'd parallel things. This is this, this is this, this is this, this is this. And he did this in these discourses on what he called the difference between the religion of the mind, which for his apostles would have been Judaism, and the religion of spirit, religion of the heart, which was his teachings that he was bringing in. And what he told them was, and what we would call the empty church is the religion of the mind, and the full church then is the religion of the spirit or heart, is in the religion of the mind, you know about the fact of God, and you can pontificate about it. Many of us who've been in the Urantia movement and have been to Urantia study groups know people who know an awful lot about the Urantia book and these wonderful, wonderful cosmic facts. It's fascinating. It's absolutely wonderful. And yet they lack true love, many of these people. So they know about the fact of God, but they haven't yet really felt the presence of God. Because the minute you feel the presence of God, a whole new thing happens to you. A transformation happens. You are truly humbled and you truly begin to love. You can't help but begin to love others. The empty church or religion of the mind is upheld by ecclesiastical authority. But the religion of spirit or heart is based on human experience. And so there are hundreds of thousands of people that are brought up in the empty church They go to church all the time, and yet they haven't had a personal confrontation with God the Father themselves. And that's why many of those people have left those churches and are seeking God and a meaningful relationship with God in the New Age movement, which provides many, many, many forms of expression, many, many ways of seeking God. And each way, in a way, is a step towards revelation. It's a door or a window helping those people get out of one way, trying to move into a higher way. The empty church requires only passive and purely intellectual assent. But if you truly are walking into an ongoing communion and relationship with God, it entails active participation of mind and soul. The religion of the mind provides an easy path, little or no exertion, and provides settled security and conformity. And as we all know, most of the people, especially in this country, are intellectually very lazy. The Urantia Book 2, anytime you study Revelation, it begins to shake your foundations of false beliefs, and your security no longer is there. The religion of spirit requires effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress. But it does require effort. It requires struggle. There will be conflict that happens, and all of you have experienced that. The tremendous inner conflict and releasing those ideas and expectations that Revelation is asking you to release. Theories that really are not reality. Again, it's progress. It's constant movement. You can't sit back in the easy chair and put your feet up, light up your cigar, and relax. It doesn't happen. You're constantly being moved forward. And then the religion of the mind is always quoting the prophets of old. It's okay to occasionally do that. But guess what? What is Christ Michael asking us? And he asked that of his apostles and his evangelists when he was the fourth epical revelation. This religion of spirit inspires you to become living prophets, not quoting prophets of old, but you yourself becoming a prophet of the Most High. Become a spiritual hero of the coming kingdom. And we know what that coming kingdom is to a certain extent. It's our responsibility to bring in that first stage of light and life. The empty church divides people and sets them in conscientious array against each other. There's an increasing number of denominations within the Christian movement. In India, there are conflicts between the Hindus and the Muslims, and it gets worse and worse. They kill each other. In Ireland, there's conflict between Christians. They kill each other, the Irish and the Catholics. It's interesting that in reality, it really has nothing to do with religion. You know, it's the haves and have-nots. It's a political thing, but it's always convenient now because that's what these established religions of authority are. They're political. They're secularized. They're not truly spiritual. And that's why in Ireland you have the battle, which is really the political thing between the haves and the have-nots, and it's between the Catholics and the Protestants in a way, because those churches are very political. In the Mideast, you've got Jerusalem itself, which is a holy city for three major world religions of authority: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. And they're killing each other off. And then within each one of those religions, people don't agree. They're divided. The full church progressively draws people together and causes them to be understandingly sympathetic with one another. When Revelation first started coming through Gabriel, one thing that was said over and over and over, there is a need for a common language, a common spiritual language that brings people together with a common understanding of your origins and how you are related to each other and who the first source and center of all is. And when that first started coming through, you cannot believe the resistance that we got from people. And we were trying to reach people within the New Age movement in Prescott, and those people didn't want to hear that, which surprised me. I would think that most people would understand and agree, but no, they didn't think so. And it really pushed some buttons, because in reality, they were caught up over here, getting caught up in doctrine, whatever it was, or I follow Alice Bailey and that person follows Ashtar. We can't come together. There's no commonality there. And we can go on and on. It's the same within Christianity. It's the same within all of the established world religions. The religion of mind requires uniformity of belief. And that's why you have, I don't know how many different Baptist churches. And Gabriel shared with you that when he was a minister, how he would experience this argument between ministers. And here they all love the universal father of all. They love the creator son, Michael. They didn't know him as Christ Michael. They knew him, though, as Jesus Christ, who represented the universal father. These Christian ministers were battling and fighting over whether you should be baptized in the name of the Holy Spirit or the Holy Ghost or the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. I mean, such trite little things, or whether you should be immersed or whether you should be sprinkled, and on and on and on. So silly. And yet they're very serious about it, and it divides them. So they were caught up in that. You've got to have my viewpoint. You got to have my views. And if you don't, then forget it. But people who are truly, truly experiencing God can come together in a unity of spirit. And the only uniformity you would have was a uniformity of insight and spirit feeling. What is spirit feeling? It's one of those worshipful emotions that the Urantia book talks about. Might want to think about that. Doesn't mean you have to have the same intellectual views on everything, the same political views, and we can go on and on. Doesn't mean that at all. Also, the religion of mind crystallizes into lifeless creeds. And that's what many people are trying to get away from. But the full church, it grows into the increasing joy. Joy gets fuller and bigger and more, an increasing liberty of ennobling deeds of loving service and merciful ministration. So in true religion, then your joy increases and you feel a liberty in you. The freedom then to serve others in love. That's what it is. You get out of yourself. Remember, we've talked about that, and you become other-oriented. When you get out of your own little self-made identity, begin to move into the God-made identity of your personality circuitry, you forget about yourself, and you can become other-oriented. Remember, I've talked about how at times you can get caught up in your own misery. We all have grievous situations that come our way. We all have problems, and yet it doesn't have to control us. We can carry a little bit of sadness or grief within us, but when we're with people, they're not even necessarily aware of it, because when we're with them, we focus on them and their needs, and we feel joyful that we have God within us, and we feel compassion for that other person. And we can actually focus on them in spite of the problems that we're going through. That's when we truly are being touched by God. These two discourses by Jesus are so full and rich. They're on pages 1728 to 1733. It's sections 5 and 6 called the Discourse on True Religion and the Second Discourse on Religion. I see before me that there isn't one empty temple, one empty church, one empty vessel here. I see beautiful, beautiful, full temples, and they're getting fuller and fuller and fuller. So remember that. And do not doubt your reality, and never, never doubt that rich inner experience that you have with your God. Don't ever let any outside forces put doubt into that, because that, what is happening within you, in your souls and in your spirits, is of eternal value and will continue on when all the outside things are going to wither away. Thank you.
Vanetics with Gabriel of Urantia and Neon Emerson Chase, an ongoing series of lectures and teachings on spiritual leadership, personal change, and the principles of divine administration. Part of the curriculum of the University of Ascension Science and the Physics of Rebellion. More information can be found at uaspr.org.